Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. You are with Lydia Mackay and I'm very, very excited to be here because it's been a long time since I've brought to you a solo episode. So thank you for tuning in. And if you looked at the title of today's episode, we're going to be talking about returning to running after a long time off. What happens when you have time off and what are the considerations that you should be making when you're getting back into running with you, whether you've had 4 weeks off, 4 months off, 4 years off because of injury, or maybe just because you just needed a bit of a break. Now, if you guys don't know me, I'm Lydia Mackay. I'm a physiotherapist and I'm one half of the Stronger Stride podcast, which is a weekly conversation about all things running. We interview a range of guests from researchers, health professionals, journalists, and authors. And we also just have a bit of a deep dive into some running related concepts from a physiotherapy, coaching, exercise physiology perspective, as well as just a good chin wag about some of the highs and lows of being a recreational runner. And today I'm going to be using my personal story, telling you about what's been going on for me the last year and what I'm doing now as I'm getting back into running, which I am so stupidly excited about, so excited that I just don't even have the words. And I am sensing my excitement being just so big that I'm so scared to be this excited because I just don't want it to fall apart. So I'm cautious about, I'm just cautious about being excited. I'm like nervous to be excited because I just don't want it to fall apart. I feel like it's not that I'm sitting here like dreading what could happen in the future, but I am trying to just be so present and just enjoy what I'm doing. And I've already had so many people say like, oh, what are you going to train for? I'm like, no. We are just trying to get back. So without further ado, let's dive into all the goodies. Actually, no. Before we dive into the goodies, I just want to do a shout out to the wonderful Sophie Lane, who is my co-host and co-producer, who has been basically the voice of this podcast the last sort of 6 months. And just a little bit of a PSA so you guys are aware, I've actually had a vocal cord injury, which I've been managing for the last 8 years, but the last 12 months has been not very good. And so I'm actually seeing a speech pathologist and an ENT and recently just had some surgery on my vocal cords because it's been a very limiting factor of my life. And it's made it so I haven't been able to talk on the podcast, essentially, as well as not really able to work, or not really, just not able to work, blah, blah, blah. This is not overly important, but just if you're a long-time listener, this is just so you guys know where I've been. I've still been in the background of the podcast and still been very much involved in the podcast behind the scenes, but I just haven't actually been able to be on the show. And usually I'm still there for all the interviews, I'm just on mute, so you just can't hear me. So I'm very excited also to just be back on the podcast and having a good old chin wag. So let's just move on from that. But I did just want to make that clear in case you guys are wondering why I disappeared for so long and now why I'm back. So welcome back, Lydia. Yes, thank you. I'm here. And now we're going to dive into all the goodies. As I said, we are talking about what to do, how to get back, what to consider, and also just what I've been doing. So here we go. Last year, 12 months ago, 13, maybe 14 months ago now, I did have a solid injury. I tore my proximal hamstring tendon. Now, tendon tears can be quite slow to recover. And in particular, the proximal hamstring is just a notoriously niggly area that can take a long time to recover, even if it's like a tendinopathy. But this was a tendon tear, and I did it overstretching at the gym, doing an RDL, which was a gross, awful, just a not nice feeling. And it's so funny. So many people have asked, they're like, oh, did it hurt? I'm like, yes, it did. Like, just imagine, like, how would that feel tearing your hamstring tendon, like the tendon that rides up into your butt? Like, yeah, it hurt. But anyway, it was more like, at the time, I just didn't realize how bad it was. And it was funny, actually. I had a friend message me just recently about something non-running related. And I scrolled back and I was like, oh, I haven't spoken to this person in ages. And I scrolled back to the last message and they'd said to me, hey, do you want to come to the People's Biathlon? Which if you guys live in Sydney, that's on a Friday afternoon at Bondi Beach and it's like a run swim on the sand. And my reply was like, oh, I've actually just torn my hamstring. Ha 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 ha. Don't worry. I'll probably be back. Just give me a couple of weeks. It's not a bad one, I think I said. And it's so funny because it's been like 14 months and I'm still sitting here with like pain in my leg and a very, very long way from 100% recovered. But I'm going to just fast track because it's not really that interesting. But I did want to give you guys a bit of an update so you know what's been going on. But essentially, I had the hamstring tear. The rehab was going pretty well. I was doing all the things, but I ended up developing some foot pain, some groin pain, and some anterior, well, yeah, my whole shin, like medial, anterior, sort of lateral, not around the back of the calf, and then sort of around the side of my knee, like heaps of pain in I guess spots that now looking back, I'm like, oh, it sounds like some nerve pain. So it sounds like I've had some neural irritation with this hamstring tear. But at the time, it all seemed like separate injuries because my hip and groin pain was just very specifically every time I would squat, or sorry, every time I do a Bulgarian split squat. And then I started getting this achy foot pain, which again, like it didn't really make sense. And I actually ended up thinking it was a bone stress injury at the time. I initially thought it was my peroneal, then I thought it was bone stress. And then I was like, no, maybe it's nervy pain. And then I went back to the bone stress thoughts. And then I ended up deciding that it was my cuboid after seeing many different physios. All my colleagues had a look. I saw several podiatrists. I saw the sports doctor and then several physios external to where I work. And yeah, it didn't really ever make sense. And it was very frustrating. Initially when I had the injury and I had to stop running, like it was very frustrating. Anyone who's had an injury, you guys know it's annoying, blah, blah, blah. But it was a bit of a weird one. Like it was never that painful initially, but and so I wasn't overly bothered. I was like, yeah, it's just a bit achy, but I'm going to be really conservative and like pull back my volume, just do less, stop running, like just really let it chill out so that I can get back sooner and have less time off. But the more I rested, the worse it got, which doesn't really make any sense. Like I was doing so little and pretty much over this whole time period, like there was a bit where I could do quite a bit of walking, but it actually limited me walking so much. So I was barely walking 5,000 steps a day. I was having pain trying to go for swims, so I couldn't do much swimming. I was also having a lot of pain just walking around in the gym. Couldn't really do any lower body exercises, no squats, no lunges, no Bulgarians, no step ups. I couldn't even do like a leg extension or even a hammy curl for ages. I could still do some calf raises though, which thankfully the most important exercise for a runner. So I was still getting some of them done, but I was very much just deconditioning and detraining and the pain was just getting a lot worse. So looking back, I don't really know why I didn't think that it was nervy. I think I just thought I had a really weird cuboid that wasn't really making much sense. And everyone who I spoke to was like, just give it more time, have more rest, like just do less, do less. And I think because I'm the kind of person that probably presents as that type A, like do all or none. And like, I'm swimming, I'm running, I'm going to the gym and I'm trying to do all these different things. And often I think that looks like, in fact, gosh, it's just not even that much, but I think it can look like I'm doing a lot. But the reality was, or the reality is that I was very well trained to do all those things. And I wasn't actually doing any more than I'd ever done. If anything, I was actually doing a bit less. Like years ago, I was running 100K weeks, week after week, week after week, 115, 120, even 130Ks. I was training more at the gym and I was doing more swimming. I was also surfing. Like I've done way more training in the past. And like this year was like super chill. I wasn't doing that much. And then since I had that pain, I was obviously doing hardly anything. But everyone just kept on saying, do less, just rest. And it will get better, but it just got worse. Anyway, fast track to now. Basically, the realization has been, and it's still not entirely clear, but the realization is that it is actually all neural. So it's still a bit question marks. You don't know exactly what's going on. And I'm still in the process of seeking more help, more treatment, more advice. But I've discovered it's responded really well to doing some nerve mobilizations. And in particular, I've been mobilizing my sural nerve, which is a sensory nerve on the outside of the calf and the foot. And that has been night and day. So within 2 weeks, I went from not being able to walk more than 5,000 steps a day, not being able to even hop, not even if I wanted to. It's not even about like pushing through pain, but I just had no ability to hop. And then when I did hop, it was very painful. And it would just get worse and worse. It would never warm up. I'd then be sore for like 2 weeks and it would set me back. And within a couple of days of me doing these serral nerve glides and these serral nerve massages, or like sort of like a friction massage situation, my pain just decreased dramatically. So I was just about in tears. I was so excited. I was over the moon. And big shout out to Mitch from iMove Physio in Panania, who suggested that I start doing some neural glides, and he really believed that all my pain was nerve pain. So excited for Mitch. Like, thank you so much, because I definitely had this suspicion that there was a nervy involvement, but I didn't realize how much that was a part of it. So basically having this realization that now I can hop my foot and there's no pain, and basically it's more or less just disappeared, that pain that I've had on the side of my foot. And where it's at now is I just have a lot of these like nervy pains in my shin and leg. And like, honestly, I don't even want to go into that because I still don't really know. And all the people that I've seen don't even quite understand it and don't quite know what's going on. And yeah, we're just working through it, still trying to figure it out. I still can't do a lot of stuff at the gym. Like, I still can't squat or lunge, which is something that's actually really important as I return to run, because now that I'm starting to get back, it's very easy to just want to do a whole heap of running. And that's basically what inspired me to do this episode, because I know that when we go back into things that we haven't done for a while, but we used to do a lot of, it's very easy to think that we can just go back to exactly where we were. But it's so important to not just try and slot right back into where you were, because that is usually when things go wrong. And I think having a really good idea of where you're actually at physically, from a cardio perspective, from a muscle, tendon, cardiovascular perspective, I already said cardio, didn't I? Like, literally bones, muscles, tendons, cardio, all of that, like having a really clear idea of how fit or unfit you are. And it's not like a personal like, oh, don't be like so hard on yourself. It's like, no, you're deconditioned right now. Like, you need to be realistic, because if you try and go back to where you were, that's usually when the wheels are going to fall off and you're going to have an issue. So that's pretty much where I'm at now. And I wanted to go through what I'm doing to get my body ready to run and like to build up my running volume, and the things that I think are really important to consider. So let's dive into that. So firstly, what actually happens when you have time off? Now, so it's actually very timely, because Nathan Carlson, who is a physical therapist or a physiotherapist from the States, he actually has a podcast and he talks about running injuries and all that good stuff and the science. He actually just did a post, which was, as I said, very timely, because he spoke about what happens when you stop running. And that's something that I wanted to mention in this podcast. So I'm going to link the post that he did, because it was a really lovely overview with some nice diagrams talking about what happens when you stop with regard to your bones and your muscles and your cardio fitness. And, you know, you can look at the graph that I'm going to pop in the show notes, or you can just imagine like the y-axis is capacity. So that's like what your body can handle. And then the x-axis is time, because time is always on the x-axis. And the graph is just like, it kind of goes along like slightly downhill, and then it just like drops very downhill, and then it just stays down the bottom. And that's looking at like 1 to 4 weeks. So the summary is, and I'm going to put some of the research in the show notes, but when you have time off, your body detrains. And it's just the same as like when you do exercise and you lift weights and you do training, your body trains. Like, you get stronger, you get fitter. And I think that's like the wonderful, incredible thing about the body, is how adaptable it is. And how we always complain about like, oh, I lose fitness so quickly. It's like, yeah, but like, your body detrains and then it can also retrain. And like, it wouldn't be fair if like you just like trained once and then you were fit. Like, that's just not how it works. So that's just the beauty and the pain of having an interest in endurance training or endurance running or whatever it is that you're doing. In fact, actually, some of the research looks at cycling. So if you're a cyclist, then this is going to be applicable for you. But really, it's just anyone who does longer bouts of cardiovascular training. So it could have implications to a variety of sports, but essentially your detraining happens throughout your whole body. So cardiovascularly, the biggest one and like the most, I guess, well recognized and understood thing that's going to drop off is your VO2 max. Now, The VO2 max is just how much the maximum amount of oxygen is that your muscles can intake or like absorb during your endurance exercise during a specific time frame. So that VO2 max is a number, and it's just, yeah, how much you can absorb. And the bigger the number, the better. The lower number, the worse. And that's something that's pretty gold standard used to measure kind of how fit you are. And like a lot of that is your genetics, but then you can have a trained effect or a training effect for that. So we know that as soon as you stop training, that VO2 max is actually going to go down, and it can actually happen within just a few days of stopping training. And some of the studies that I looked at were showing between that 12 to 14 days, you can lose anywhere from 3 to 7% of your VO2 max. And after 2 months, it could be up to 20%. And that is absolutely wild. When I was reading this paper, I was like, holy moly. I don't know whether I can say I didn't realize that, or I just had kind of forgotten the extent of it. But yeah, it's a heck of a lot of detraining. The other thing that is going to change is, well, so many things are changing, but is worth noting is blood pressure. So your blood pressure can actually increase during exercise as well as at rest. Now, we know that blood pressure is linked to cardiovascular disease, which is, I'm fairly certain, the number one killer in the world. Like, I think that's how most people die, which, you know, lifestyle is the biggest factor that we have to influence that. And so the fact that your blood pressure is going up when you're detraining is kind of scary. Now, I don't think it's really something to be overly worried about when you're deconditioned due to an injury. Like, you know, it just is what it is. And like, fortunately, I was still able to do some swimming throughout this time. Like, I was probably averaging maybe four swims a week if I was lucky, if my leg allowed me to. So I haven't totally lost everything. I'm hopefully not going to die of heart disease. But, you know, for someone that has health as a value, and probably a lot of people listening, looking after your health is really important. So we don't want our blood pressure to go up, and we don't want our VO2 max to go down. Other things that are going to happen, even just after a couple of days, so moving on from the heart, is our muscles are going to atrophy, or like, hopefully everyone knows what that word means, but just means that they get smaller and you lose muscle fiber. So you have that even just after a couple of days. And after 4 weeks, you can have impaired transport of magnesium in the muscles, which can then affect your ability to create ATP, which is your energy in your muscles. So there is so much which is just dropping off. At a hormonal level, we have reduction in insulin sensitivity, which is really important for risk of type 2 diabetes, which again, something that is just absolutely not what we want. And again, if you're a healthy human or someone who prioritizes and values their health, these are things that we don't want to do. And then the next thing, which is like so important, particularly for runners, is our bone density, and particularly for women, really important. Over time off, we lose our bone density, so they get weaker, and we also have an increased risk of fracture. So looking at all these things, part of me was really sad, but then also part of me was so excited, because I was like, wow, I've had most of my life improving all of those things. Like, how lucky am I to have had a somewhat healthy, mostly healthy body most of my life, where I've been able to improve my VO2 max, been able to improve or reduce my blood pressure, reduce my heart rate, improve my insulin sensitivity, and like improve my bone density, do all these good things for my health. And it's really exciting, because now as I'm going back to all these things, and hopefully you can think this if you've had time off, like how wonderful that the body can just continue to adapt. Every single time you go out and do stuff, you're encouraging your body to adapt, provided you have the right amount of recovery time. And that kind of takes us into the next thing, is like, how do you know if you're ready to get back into an activity, and how do you know how much to do? Because you're probably going to know roughly if you're like ready to start something, because let's say you've had a significant injury, you're probably going to be seeing like a physio or a doctor or an EP, someone that's actually treating and managing that injury. Or if you've just had like a sore knee or a sore something that's like a little bit niggly and you've just had time off, or maybe you've just had a big trip away and then you're like back and you're like, okay, I'm ready to get back into it. Like, you're probably going to have an idea of like, okay, I'm ready to start. But like, I think what's harder is, where do you actually start? Like, do you start at 50% of what you're doing before? Do you start at 10%? And unfortunately, there isn't any one guideline on that. Like, do exactly this amount of what you did before, depending on the time you've had off, because there's just so many factors that make up like our injury risk and like, you know, what's going to be comfortable and realistic. But I think the first thing to consider is like, if you are seeing someone like a physio, then ask them like, well, I mean, they should be telling you, they should be going through all this for you, but like, you know, chat to them and actually get a bit of a clear idea of what you can do. And then the next thing that I'd recommend is actually going to get a coach and getting someone to write you a return to run plan. Now, as a physio, I write these a lot for patients, and it's particularly important coming back from bone stress injuries and really just any injury. But the reality is, the longer of a time you've had off, the slower and the longer time that you want to give yourself to get back to fitness. So for me, I've had a really long time off. Like, I had a full 9 months of no running, and then the 3 to 4 months, about 3 months prior to that, I was running, but I was having these injuries. I was kind of like a bit patchy. I did a bit of stuff. Like, there was probably like a good month where I managed to run, and then after that, it kind of went all a bit not so fab. So for me, my return to run has got to be pretty conservative. Like, I haven't had 5 years off, but I've had, you know, 9 months off. And then the next thing is like, what have you done in that time off? Have you maintained your cardiovascular fitness by doing some kind of other exercise? Your bone density by doing some plyometric drills at the gym? And have you maintained your muscles by lifting some heavy weights? Now, for me, I'm going to use myself as an example. I did maintain some cardiovascular fitness with swimming and trying to hop on the cardio machines at the gym. Like, I did a little bit of rowing, a little bit of cycling, a little bit on the elliptical. Unfortunately, my injury made it really hard to do all those things with much intensity, and it was really hard to do much of any of that because after a while I would start to get the pain back in my leg. So I didn't really have any activity that was pain-free. I did try and do quite a bit of walking during one period. I managed to go on some bush walks, but then that kind of just all started to get worse again. So if you were able to maintain more cardio fitness, then that's going to make it a lot easier. So I guess if you are injured listening to this right now, this would be a good time to try and find something that you can do to maintain your cardio fitness, because that's just going to make it far easier to return and also mean that you can return not from the very bottom, but like from, you know, a little bit closer to where you were. As for bone density and muscles, now that's mostly stuff that you're going to keep doing in the gym. Now, again, for me, like, I've been able to do heaps of strength stuff on my uninjured side, so I'm still doing a lot of lunging and squatting, like single leg stuff on my left. But unfortunately, on my right, I've been very limited to how much I can do because, again, my injuries limited me on particularly hip hinge movements and also lunging, squatting, even leg extension for a while. But I will say, for most of the time, I've been able to do some kind of lower body strength work on that right side every single week. In saying that, my sort of rep ranges and the weight that I'm lifting is really not quite enough because of the injury. So it's really hard to say that I would have maintained my muscle. Like, I think I mean, looking at my muscle, like, I haven't got really obvious atrophy in my muscle. Like, it doesn't look like this leg is all skinny, but in saying that, like, it feels like it. But like, I've definitely maintained more probably than, well, I've maintained a lot more than if I wasn't going to the gym. So I've got some things in my favor and then some things not so much in my favor. I think my main concern is bone density because I have had a bone stress injury before. And the research says if you've had one bone stress injury in the past, you're more likely to get one in the future. I'm also a female, which means I'm an increased risk. And I also didn't have a period for maybe 6 years. And that also increases my risk. So I've got a lot of things that will increase my risk of bone injury. So that's something that I'm keeping top of mind and really taking into consideration as I build my running program. So as I said, talk to your physio, talk to your doctor, and then make a plan, whether that's coach informed, physio informed, or whether you look online and look at like a return to run plan. Now, what I did is I went online and I looked at like, well, I first was like, okay, how long am I going to give myself? And I was like, right, I'm going to do 2 4-week blocks to start off. I'm just going to dip my toe in the water, see how we go. Like, I first did a 2K run that felt pain-free. Then I did a 5K run that felt pain-free. And then I was like, okay, I'll have another couple of days off and then I'll go again, see how that feels. And then I'm going to make myself a plan. And so I was like, if I can run, you know, 2 to 5Ks now, I'm going to make a plan that builds up to a nice half marathon roughly. And I'm going to do that over the next sort of like 8 to 12 weeks, because I think that's a nice spot for me. Like, given the fact that I've run since I was 8, I've had a lot of injuries in the past, which again makes me an increased risk for future injuries. But I have also done a lot of running. Like, prior to this injury, I was running around 90 Ks a week and my body was feeling really good. I was feeling like I was recovering really well. I just ran a PB for my 5K. Yeah, everything was pretty good. Like, there weren't any sort of major issues. But as I said, I've had lots of injuries in the past and I've had a lot of time off. And truthfully, all the injuries that I've had have always been like long bouts off. They've never just been like a couple weeks or a couple months. They've been like 6 to 12 months to like 5 years for different injuries and like little bits of running in between. But I've always been someone that's done a lot of strength training. That's been the through line. So I think that's something that fortunately I can lean on a little bit and probably jump back into running maybe a little bit more than some people. In saying that, also probably a little bit less than other people that have had time off. So, you know, it's very unique and that's why I think it's really good to get some help. So I made a bit of a plan and then I had Sophie Lane look at it, who's a running coach, and she coaches a lot of beginner runners. So it was really good to have her look at it because she sees a lot of people go from no running all into running. So she's got a good idea of what that would look like for a beginner. And I'm kind of treating myself like a beginner at the minute. Now, if you're not seeing a physio or a doctor or any of those people, there are some things that you can do at home to test out how well your body is going to be ready to handle running. Now, the most important muscle for running is actually the calf muscle. It takes up to 6 to 8 times our body weight when we run, whereas things like our glutes and quads are only taking like 3 to 4 times our body weight. So if you want to test out what muscle, like, sorry, if you want to test out your body and be like, okay, are we ready? Are we ready to go? I'd be testing out the calves more than I'd be testing out anything else. So as I said before, fortunately, calf raises were the one thing that I could keep doing in the gym throughout this whole period off. So that's actually going to have a huge, like, advantage for me. Well, I mean, all things considered, like, it's something that I'm really pleased that I was managed to keep doing. So there is some research that looks at some normative data for healthy people and roughly what you should be able to do at different age brackets and different sexes. So for example, if you're between the ages of 20 to 29 and you're a male, you should be able to do 37 single leg calf raises. So that's 37 reps to failure. Or if you're a woman, it's around 30. And then if we jump up a couple of age brackets, 40 to 49, it drops down to 28 reps for a male and 24 for a female. And then if we jump up to 60 to 69, it's 19 for a male and 19 for a female. So I'll post the link to that in the show notes so you guys can actually look at the table and see where you fit in there. But doing some single leg calf raises to failure is just a good way to see, like, what's my calf endurance like? So firstly, that's a good one to tick off. The next one that you can tick off is, can you do 30 seconds of single leg calf raises? Oh, sorry. 30 seconds of single leg hopping. And can you do that pain-free? Is there any apprehension or does that feel really good? So that's the next one. And then lastly, like, I would just go for a little jog, like dip your toe in the water with 1K or 2K, wait 24 to 48 hours and just see how the body has pulled up. And that's going to give you an idea. And so for me, that's how I started. I did some hopping. I actually made sure that I could hop pain-free for like a week and a half. Like, I waited that long after I was like, yep, I can hop. Yep, test again the next day, I can hop. And just got my body used to doing some hopping every day. And I was like, right, this is definitely pain-free. I'm now going to take that to my running. And then my first run that I did was just 2Ks. And I did it, well, I want to say I did it really slow and really flat. But it wasn't completely flat and it wasn't completely slow. It was what felt comfortable to me in the moment. But I was also just so excited to run and just like, oh, I just can hardly even explain how excited I was that I probably ran a little bit faster than I should have. And it's hard to say if it felt easy and comfortable or like what it felt like. It was kind of like going on a roller coaster ride as a kid for the first time and you're just so excited and everything's kind of happening in slow motion, but also in fast motion. Like, it's all just kind of happening and you're almost like out of body, like, whoa, oh my gosh, look at me go, I'm doing this thing. And then it's all over and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I just did that. And so that was my first 2Ks. Like, I was just so good. I was so excited. I'm almost crying thinking about how good it was because it had been so long since I'd run. And every time I tried to do anything, I just had so much pain. So It just felt like such a breakthrough moment. It felt like I was turning over a new leaf and I was into this next chapter of my life, hopefully doing some of my life again. Because, you know, running, to say running is like my favorite thing in the world is an overstatement. I think running is great, but I'm not obsessed with it, even though it probably sounds like it right now. I think I just love moving. I love being outside. I love moving my body. I love challenging myself. And running is something that allows me to do that. It's also a very social thing. And so it's become a big part of my life. And with my injury, I've been limited to even do swimming and gym classes and other forms of exercise, even cycling or surfing too. So it wasn't that I just missed running. It was that I missed like doing all the things. So being able to go for this run represented more than just returning to running. It was like, oh my goodness, like I might be able to get my life back. Like I might be able to run into the waves in the ocean and like pop up my surfboard and go for a ride. Like just any of these things, go for a bushwalk, like all those things where it's just part of your life. Like dancing, like that is something that I'd love to do. Like just anything where you can move your body and you're like, hell yeah, like how good is it to move? So the run was so many things all in one. But what I was saying about testing yourself, I just did 2Ks. I felt like I could have run forever and ever and ever. But at the same time, I finished those 2Ks and I was like bright red like a beetroot. If you've ever run with me before, you'll know that I do get very red in the face, even when I'm going at like moderate to low intensity. And I'm also a sweater. Like I'm always very sweaty when I run, but I was just dripping more than I've ever seen myself sweat before. And like so red that like, I've got freckles on my face. I'm a freckly girl and you could not see my freckles because my face was just like full red, like every single part of my face. And I just look like I'd done like an all out like 10K, like the hardest run I've ever done. And I could feel it in my body. Like I felt like I'd just been for a long run. Like, you know, that feeling where you come back after your long run and you're like, oh yeah, like that was a solid run. Or like, just you can feel it in your body. Like you take your shoes off and you're like, oh yeah, like get those shoes off and like get into that cold shower. Like I just had this sort of like full body sense of like fatigue and exertion. I was like, wow, like I've really been for a workout today, haven't I? Which was so wild to feel because I was like, I like ran 2Ks and, you know, as I said, I was running 90K weeks. I was doing like a 25 to 30K midweek long run. I was just like running all the time, often doing double days and just feeling really good. And like, you know, running for me very rarely makes me sore or feel tired. Mostly my runs are at a zone 2 pace and just super comfy. So it was such a weird feeling to run and feel exhausted. Like I kind of liked it because I was like, wow, like how bizarre. Like I've run 2Ks and I feel like I've done like a track session or like I feel like I've just gone for like a race, which was like a cool kind of novel feeling. So I kind of enjoyed that. But what I really wanted to monitor was like, how does my foot feel? So what I did as soon as I got home is I took my shoes off and I checked my single leg hop test. So could I still hop for 30 seconds pain-free? And I could, which was just the biggest win ever. And then what I wanted to do the next day is monitor my symptoms. So did I have any increase in symptoms? Did I have any pain? Was there any spots that were particularly sore? And I actually felt really good. So I kind of was expecting that I would get like, you know, sore muscles, like a sore quad or a sore hip flexor or sore glutes or sore calves, but nothing was actually sore. Like none of my muscles were sore. Nothing was achy. I didn't feel tired. Like everything felt totally good. So the next run I went on, I did a 5K and basically just repeated the same thing. Everything felt great. I was stoked. I was over the moon. And it was a really good like green flag and tick to move on to the next phase of training, which was like actually making a plan for the next 8 weeks. So that would be my recommendation. If you're getting back into something, start off with just a couple of really short, really easy runs. Ideally go somewhere flat so you're not as challenged cardiovascularly and just go as easy as you possibly can and then reassess 24 to 48 hours after and see if your body feels sore or tight in any area. Now, I don't think you should get too obsessed if you've got like, oh, my muscles are tight, like things are sore. Because, you know, if you haven't run for a while, it's going to be pretty normal that you're going to be a bit stiff, a bit tight, a bit sore, and that's fine. But what you don't want is to have any of your injury pain. If you've got any of your injury pain, then, you know, talk to your physio. It depends on what the injury is, but it might be a sign that you're not ready to return to running. Now, obviously, I'm talking about if you've had a full rest from running, which is different to if you've just had a deload from running, okay? And as I said, like, if you're seeing a physio or a podiatrist, whoever it is, be guided by them. Like, this is not individualized advice, which you guys should be able to understand that. I'm sure you guys do. So, okay, that's the first part. You've had a bit of an idea of what you can handle, how your body feels, and you've done a bit of an assessment of, like, you know, what was my previous running tolerance? How long have I been a runner for? What's my cardiovascular conditioning like? My bones, my muscles, my tendons, all that good jazz. And then you're going to make a bit of a running plan. So I'm not going to give you any guidance to what that running plan looks like because it's just so individualized, but I'm going to tell you what my running plan is. So I'm actually, like, the first week, so I'm at 2 weeks, or I'm at my third week of return to run. The first week I did 19Ks, the second week I did 24Ks, and this week, it's a Friday as I'm recording this, and I've run 19Ks already, and my plan is to do, like, another 6 to 8Ks, so I'll finish on, 25 to 27Ks, and then I'm going to have a deload week. The plan for me, and I would recommend this for everyone, is to have a deload week probably at the earliest every fourth week. So 3 weeks building, 1 week deloading. And then sort of at the latest, like 6 to 8 weeks, have a deload. And then every either sixth week or 12th week, I would have a full week off. And that is really for your bones because there's some research which shows that can improve your bone density and reduce your risk of stress fractures. As I said, my biggest concern as I return to run is my bone density / my risk of stress fractures. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing for me because I know that cardiovascularly, even though I feel like I'm the least fit I've ever been in my life, I've also maintained some fitness. And on all these runs that I've gone on, I've still felt quite comfortable and my pace is so much slower than it used to be. But I'm also, like, I've gone for a couple of social runs and I've been able to have a chat and keep up at a pace that's not even too far off where I was at before. So, you know, cardiovascularly, yes, like, I feel like I've got a long way to go, but it's not a major concern. Like, that's going to build up pretty quickly. And muscular wise, like, yes, it's not ideal, but fortunately strength training has been a really big part of my routine for, you know, 10 years now. And so I've got a relatively good baseline. So even with a little bit of deconditioning, it's not really going to be a big concern. Like, I've already not pulled up even the slightest bit sore anywhere in my body from running. So I don't think I'm going to have that feeling of my muscles kind of holding me back. But my bones are something that I am concerned about because you can't actually monitor them. Like, you can't feel what your bones are feeling. You only really know when it's too late and when you've got a bone stress injury. So that's going to be my biggest concern because, you know, all those things. And as I said, I'm super excited to get back. So I'm going to have to really work hard to be patient and not go over the top. But having those deload weeks is going to be, like, the best way to reduce that risk. So as I said, anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, even up to 12 weeks, having that full deload week. And I think for me, every fourth week is going to be a deload week. So after this week, I'm going to drop down to, like, 8Ks for the week. And then I'll do another 3 week build, probably building up to 30Ks, 35Ks over the week. And then I'm going to have a full week completely off. And I'm also going to be ready to adjust the plan at any point in time if I feel like things aren't quite going right. So I guess that's the next part and the final part of this podcast is my advice to anyone who is coming back after a prolonged period off, or even for someone who's starting out, or someone who is, like, wanting to increase their running volume or start training for a marathon or start training for an Ironman, whatever it is, you're about to start doing more and you want to make sure that your body can handle it. So the biggest mistakes that I would see, and I would say are what cause injury in most people, and that is too much too soon. So doing too much running than your body is ready for and trying to make it happen too soon. So the best way to combat that, and my advice for that, is have a plan and make it more conservative than you think. If in doubt, do less or get advice from a coach and or physio or EP. So do less and know that you will get good adaptation by going slowly and conservatively. The next sort of biggest mistake I see is thinking that you can just return to your old training volume. Now, dependent on how much time you've had off, you may be able to return to something similar to where you were. Maybe you've only had 4 weeks off. But if you're anywhere near myself, like having a whole 9 months off and really the best part of 13 to 14 months of not doing usual training, you're going to have to go very, very conservatively. Now, there's no one number that you can return to or a percentage of where you were at before. There just isn't research like that because there's too many factors to consider, like previous training history, previous injury history, sports as a kid, metabolic health, endocrine health, yada, yada. But you can just know that the longer the time you've had off, the littler volume of exercise or running you should start with. So I would just say, don't compare yourself to where you were before. If you can, look, I'm sorry, but you're probably always going to compare yourself to where you were before, and that's just part of being a human. But if you can, try not to think about where you were before and think of this as like a new journey, like a new sport, a new activity, and imagine yourself like a total beginner, because I think that will allow you to have some mental leeway going into your training where you just kind of allow some space of like, you know, it's okay. Like we're just starting and we're just starting out and we're just going to go along with the flow and see how things go. So with that in mind, again, something that I see as like a big mistake and a big issue, and also something that I think would prevent you from getting better quicker, is trying to keep up with their faster friends. So for me, I just am itching to get back to all my old run clubs, and I'm itching to get back to the Thursday night track at ES Marks. And I just so want to be like running with all my friends again. But I know that that would be really silly because I'm not very fit at the moment and my body is not adapted. So if I try and keep up with all my friends, even though I might be able to, it's probably going to end up with me getting injured. And it's probably going to end up with me just doing a little bit too much, a little bit too fast. And it would just be a really silly way to get injured and very easy to avoid that. So the first 2 weeks I didn't run with anyone, and then, oh sorry, the first week and a half I didn't run with anyone, and then I went to my crusty run club, which is in Clovelly, and it's the Clovelly Crest Oceans. If you guys are in Sydney, you'll know who I'm talking about. And I did a little 6K run with them and it was so exciting. And this week I've done another social run with them as well, and I'm probably going to limit it to just that one social run a week at the minute for at least the next couple of weeks until I'm really sure that my body is handling everything really well. And then once I'm sure things are handling well, then I'm going to start doing some more social stuff, because obviously I love social running and that's a big part of why I run. But I also need to make sure my body is ready to do it. My body's healthy, it's handling it, and I don't just jump back in too soon because I don't want to get injured. So they are my tip. So I guess the summary is go slow, take your time, and really make sure you have a plan to stop yourself from getting carried away and doing too much. And I think that's pretty much it, guys. If you've got any questions about returning to running or advice getting back into things, then feel free to drop us a DM on Instagram at The Stronger Stride, or send us an email, or you can actually comment on the show. I'm not entirely sure how you do it, but I know you can on Spotify. So if you guys can figure that out, go for your life. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Soph and I love bringing these podcasts to you, and we love talking about all things running because that's just a big part of what we love and what we do. And if you are managing an injury and you need some physio advice, something more individualized, then hit me up, because I love being a physio and I love treating runners. So just send me a DM. And that is all, friends. I hope you are listening to this whilst you're doing something fun. Maybe, I was going to say cleaning your kitchen. It's the first thing that popped into my head. But like in my head, our show goes out on a Sunday. And like on a Sunday, I'm often doing my meal prep, or I'm like doing some cleaning around the house. I've come home from my long run. So that's the vibes that I'm channeling right now. So hopefully you guys are doing something cool like that. Or maybe you're out for a run, or maybe you're driving your car on the way to work. Whatever it is that you're doing, I hope that you are present in the moment and you're enjoying it. And wherever you are on your running journey, I hope you're going well and I hope you're enjoying it. And thank you so much for all the kind messages of support and reviews on our podcast. Soph and I love it and it makes us so happy. So thank you very much. And without further ado, team, we will see you next week in our next episode. So exciting. We have a modern pentathlete Olympian on the podcast next week, which I'm not going to give you any more details, but it's a very interesting conversation. And we talk about the pressures of being a female athlete, dealing with an eating disorder and body image issues, and just all the burden of being an athlete and looking after your health as well. So yeah, stay tuned, guys, and we'll see you next time.